With the latest in agriculture news from across the state and the country, it's Farm City News Day. And here's your host, Sabrina Hill.
Good morning. Thanks for turning on the radio this morning for your agriculture news. Today is Wednesday, September 20th. Coming up in today's show, does California need to update water policy, especially when it comes to water waste? We'll have more on that in a moment, but first, here's Taylor Hillman.
Prune producers have a chance to get the latest information on production research later this month.
Yeah, so this is a meeting that's being put on by the Sacramento Valley farm advisors that work with prunes, and we wanted this to be a meeting that highlights some of the most recent research going on in prune production.
Glenn County Farm Advisor Danny Lytle said the Advances in Prune Production meeting is Tuesday, September 26th at the Ord Bend Community Hall in Glenn. Famous Micheladies, Rick Buckner, and others will be there to speak, and there will be an opportunity for growers to ask questions.
Absolutely, yes. All of the Sacramento Valley Orchard Advisors who work on prunes will be there, and we hope to have lots of discussion, question-and-answer sessions, and really give attendees a lot of one-on-one time with the advisors and pick our brains for all we're worth.
You can find out more at sacvalleyorchards.com. I'm Taylor Hillman for AgNet West Radio Network.
With the Trump administration giving Congress 6 months to come up with a permanent fix to DACA, or the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, many are concerned what that means for the immigrants impacted by the program. And with that concern, scammers swoop in to try and separate farm workers from their money. Kristen Davis with the Washington State Better Business Bureau says these scams try to play off the emotions and fears.
This is kind of the perfect recipe for them to say, oh, look, there's this group of people that are dealing with a very serious situation, especially if you're also dealing with a language barrier.
Davis says if you or someone you know needs legal advice or assistance, don't respond to emails or web advertisements. She says it's important to do your homework.
There are a lot of resources out there. Do your own level of research and investigation as to what needs to be done, and then decide if you want to get additional help and what the process would be for that.
Davis added it's also important to keep all of your original documents. Farmers and ranchers in Florida are faced with an agricultural disaster following the wrath of Hurricane Irma. Here's Michael Clements with more.
Florida farmers and ranchers are assessing damages and starting the rebuilding process after Hurricane Irma devastated the state. G.B. Crawford of the Florida Farm Bureau says the state suffered an agricultural disaster that will cost producers billions.
Our farm families are busy with the process of recovery and restoration, but that process will take weeks, months, and in some cases, years. There are no official reports on the overall destruction yet available, but the early estimates and anecdotal information we have place the farm losses in the billions of dollars.
Crawford says the damages to Florida farms is extensive to all sectors of agriculture.
Citrus growers tell us that 60 to 70% of the fruit was blown off the trees. Only 10% of Florida's fall vegetable crop was in the ground, but those plants that were in production, including tomatoes, were a total loss. Many cattle ranchers tell us that they cannot gather and care for their animals because flooding has simply isolated portions of their properties.
He says Florida agriculture will rebuild.
Our farm families are just outstanding independent producers. They work hard. They help themselves. They help each other. I have no doubt that they will recondition Florida agriculture so that they will be producing food and fiber for Florida, for the nation, and the world. We want to thank everyone in your communities for your thoughts and prayers. We appreciate your support, and we thank you for your interest in Florida agricultural producers.
Relief efforts can be found on the Florida Farm Bureau website, www.ffbf.org. Michael Clements, Washington.
Political and agricultural leaders gathered on the University of Illinois campus to see transformative work by scientists in photosynthetic efficiency. Todd Gleason has more.
Actually, it's a project called RIPE that stands for Realizing Increased Photosynthetic Efficiency. It's a $45 million five-year reinvestment from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the Foundation for Food and Agriculture Research, and the UK Department of International Development. Illinois Congressman Rodney Davis, a member of the House of Representatives Ag Committee, toured the research facilities, fields, and labs. I caught up with him. He says he was impressed.
Yeah, this was a great presentation. presentation, but really a celebration. It's a celebration of a public-private partnership, the Gates Foundation, you got UKAID, you got FAR, and also the University of Illinois and the USDA. This is why I enjoy being the subcommittee chairman of the Subcommittee on Biotech, Horticulture, and Research, because this research component means so much to not only the University of Illinois and land-grant institutions like it, but also it allows us to have money to partner with private foundations like the Gates Foundation to really do what is necessary when it comes to research and photosynthesis. Their goal of the RIPE project is to grow more food on less land to feed more people years from now.
This can be done by breeding or engineering plants to take more complete advantage of sunlight.
Absolutely. It's about increasing the amount of yields by taking advantage of understanding the photosynthesis process better. And by doing that, we're able to address a global food security problem that we're going to have, that we currently have in the world right now. And it's only going to get worse when we have hundreds of millions of more people in the next few years and being asked to grow more food on less land. So we have to have new advances. That's what ag research does. That's what this public-private partnership does. And that's what we need to do.
Well, on that note, there's been more emphasis on research dollars from Congress this year than in the previous couple of decades. I asked the congressman why he thought that was the case.
Well, I'd like to say it's because of our leadership on the subcommittee, but it's because we've really tried to put a focus on it as a Congress, and especially as a House Agriculture Committee. It's not just Title VII, the research title. This is about making sure that we address global food security issues, and we do it by partnership projects and research projects like the RIPE project.
Rodney Davis is a member of the House of Representatives Committee on Agriculture. He was visiting the University of Illinois campus to explore the RIPE photosynthesis research funded in part by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. I'm Todd Gleason.
This is Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. I'm your host, Sabrina Hill. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
Ahoy there!
Hi.
I see this be the spot for treasure.
Treasure?
Is that not a large X in your field?
Well, it is, but that's an alfalfa stand. And that X doesn't stand for the treasure you think. It stands for Harv Extra.
Harv, come again?
Harv Extra. It's the greatest innovation in alfalfa, giving me greater flexibility in my stand. It's technologically advanced to provide a wider cutting window, so now I can maintain a normal harvest schedule and achieve higher quality. Or I can delay harvest for up to 7 days for higher yield potential without sacrificing quality.
Aye, be that when compared to conventional alfalfa at the same stage of maturity?
You bet. And Harv Extra alfalfa comes stacked with Roundup Ready technology.
For unsurpassed weed control, I wager.
Sure is.
This has been great, matey. But can you point me to the nearest sea?
Oh, sure. Hang a right at the Taylor Farm and head west for 1,500 miles. Can't miss it.
We didn't invent alfalfa. We just reinvented it. See the difference of Harv Extra alfalfa at harvextra.com.
It's time to rethink what you know about clean American propane and what it can do for your operation. Want efficient, reliable power independent of the grid? Propane can do that. Power for EPA-compliant engines without all the extra fluids and filters. Propane can do that. Eliminate fuel theft. Lower hourly fuel costs. Reduce downtime. Propane can do all of that. Discover all the things propane can do on your farm at propanecandothat.com.
Ahoy there!
Hi.
I see this be the spot for treasure.
Treasure?
Is that not a large X in your field?
Well, it is, but that's an alfalfa stand. And that X doesn't stand for the treasure you think. It stands for Harv Extra.
Harv, come again?
Harv Extra. It's the greatest innovation in alfalfa, giving me greater flexibility in my stand. It's technologically advanced to provide a wider cutting window, so now I can maintain a normal harvest schedule and achieve higher quality. Or I can delay harvest for up to 7 days for higher yield potential without sacrificing quality.
Aye, be that when compared to conventional alfalfa at the same stage of maturity?
You bet. And Harv Extra alfalfa comes stacked with Roundup Ready technology.
For unsurpassed weed control, I wager.
Sure is.
This has been great, matey. But can you point me to the nearest sea?
Oh, sure. Hang a right at the Taylor Farm and head west for 1,500 miles. Can't miss it.
We didn't invent alfalfa. We just reinvented it. See the difference of Harv Extra alfalfa at harvextra.com.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's Brian German.
After last year's wet winter, there's now an opportunity to update infrastructure and management policies of the state's water supply. The current water system was originally designed with only municipal and agricultural use in mind. Executive Director of the California Water Alliance, Aubrey Betancourt, noted the missed opportunities to capture available water while the state tries to catch up to newer water use philosophies.
The amount of water we've lost so far this year, you could dig a trench from New York to Los Angeles and fill it, 5 feet wide, 10 feet deep, and that's how much water was lost. So it comes again back to we have this undersized, outdated water infrastructure system that quite hasn't been updated since the 60s and 70s, and it's not able to keep up with our modern priorities, our modern requirements of it. And yet it still has to function in many ways, meeting those original concepts, which was water supply and flood protection.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Prices for most dairy products remain up from the previous year, although USDA has made adjustments in its latest outlook. Here's Rod Bain with more.
Despite slight yearly adjustments, USDA milk production forecasts continue to show a year-over-year increase. World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Seth Meyer says this is reflected in downward adjustments in most dairy product price categories from the previous month. One exception, though, was cheese prices.
For cheese, we've had a slight increase in 2017 on what we've observed about as pretty good demand, despite large supplies.
Butter prices are down due to increased stocks. As for price for non-fat dry milk and whey,
those are really influenced by how competitive we are in the global market, and that's been a pretty tough competitive market. We moved prices down for the rest of 17 and 2018 to reflect that more competitive market.
Despite the lowering of price estimates by product and class from the previous month, most categories price-wise remain up year over year. The all milk price is now at $18.05 a hundredweight, up a quarter from 2017. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Well, in today's livestock news, the U.S. Meat Export Federation is preparing for its first major marketing events for the U.S. beef in China. Joe Sheely has that story.
The U.S. Meat Export Federation is gearing up for its first major marketing events for U.S. beef in China. Senior Vice President for the Asia Pacific, Joel Haggard, has more details in this USMEF report.
It's still very early in the development of U.S. beef in China. We're just at the stage now where some sea shipments are starting to arrive and clear. The volumes are still small, but we see some positive momentum. The quality of the product's been very good. Some of the early air-chilled shipments of prime beef were warmly received. Although the prices were high, the quality was excellent. So in terms of providing that initial first impression of quality, I think we've achieved that.
A series of trade shows is planned for USMEF members in each of China's three largest cities.
Many of our exporters had received dozens, if not hundreds, of emails from interested Chinese parties, many without much knowledge of our industry or the product itself. We wanted to stage an event for all our exporters to meet the qualified Chinese importers. We put together our own trade show. And we're calling these the U.S. Beef Road Shows. They're going to take place September 25th in Beijing, September 27th in Shanghai, and September 29th in Guangzhou. We're cooperating with USDA's agriculture trade offices to bring in qualified buyers from all of China, not only from those cities, but from all the regions. We expect 300 to 400 buyers at each event. We have 20 members signed up. There's still very little exposure among not only consumers, but also the trade in terms of U.S. beef. So these roadshows are designed to show off the product and hopefully bring a greater awareness to the importers. And although this process is probably going to play out over several years, we remain extremely optimistic about the long run.
For more information, please visit usmef.org. For the U.S. Meat Export Federation, I'm Joe Sheely.
Thanks, Joe. And the Environmental Protection Agency wants to remind producers they still have a few days left to submit comments on the Waters of the U.S. or Waters Rule repeal effort. The EPA did announce that they would accept comments through September 27th. Now, they formally proposed to repeal the rule back in late June. Of course, the Trump administration plans to separately write a new regulation to replace the rule. And EPA stakeholder sessions are underway. They're held each week through November. The one on agriculture will be held October the 17th. So if you'd like more information, you can just simply go to epa.gov/WOTUSRule. That's epa.gov/WOTUSRule. But again, to make comments, you have until September 27th. I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West. AgriView with Everett Greiner is next.
I suppose the word WOTUS has little meaning for most people in the U.S. It stands for Waters of the United States. Sounds like you're talking about the Great Lakes or the Mississippi River. Well, you are. But you're also talking about a private lake, a farm pond, or even a small feeder stream. WOTUS was an Obama administration law that was supposed to keep all our fresh water clean and clear. It was a nightmare to farmers. It gave several agencies the authority to regulate water use, no matter the source. One congressman said it never was about clear water. It was about attempting to control land. Well, anyway, WOTUS is now a thing of the past. Well, almost. EPA announced plans to back in June to repeal that law. This is good news for farmers everywhere. I suppose that means if it's on my land, now it's mine. And that's AgriView for today. Everett Grinder, Agnet West.
The 2017 Bayer Future of Farming Dialogue is taking place in Germany this week. Chuck Zimmerman is there and has this interview for us.
I'm attending the 2017 Bayer Future Farming Dialogue, and I have an opportunity here to visit with one of the executive leadership. I'm going to let you, sir, first of all, just tell me your name and what it is that you're doing with Bayer.
My name is Bernd Knaff. I'm heading Department of Business Affairs and Communications. I'm a member of the Crop Science Division Executive Team and have been working for Bayer over 39 years now.
I know the first question that our audience probably would like to hear is, as was announced today, the status of the acquisition with Monsanto and what the reasonable expectation now is for when you think we might see a final close to this deal.
Yeah. So we expect the closing most likely to take place in early 2018. We are absolutely satisfied with the process so far. We have to acknowledge that a lot of work has taken place already because of other mergers or acquisitions taking place. Therefore, it is not a surprise that the authorities, of course, have some capacity limitations and want to make sure that all the evaluations are being taken care of in a professional manner.
And I understand that as part of the process you're going through there with the EU, you filed for and I guess are having a short extension to what present more final information as part of the process?
I think it is just to make sure that, let's say, the evaluation will have adequate time available so that, we're not talking about a big time difference at all. And whether it is now the end of the year or whether it is early January or mid-January, I think that that will not make such a huge difference. We fully acknowledge the necessity of having these few days additionally available to make sure that the evaluation is properly come to a conclusion, which we believe, by the way, will be positive.
Let's look at some of the things that we can expect from Bayer going forward. Obviously, what we just talked about will be key to some of the specifics of how you're going to accomplish some of these things. But in the areas of research and development, new product development, getting into things like digital farming and how you're going to do that, continuing to keep sustainability in mind. And as we've heard a fair amount here at this dialogue, also society and their wants and desires too.
We have to acknowledge that acceptance of innovation, particularly in the field of agriculture, food production, is not necessarily well understood by society. And that is a topic which we definitely need to address much more intense so that our contributions coming from research and development, for instance, are better understood and then also hopefully accepted. Agriculture will change quite dramatically, but we are not only talking about modern agriculture in highly developed countries. We are also talking about the need to foster agriculture in developing markets, and here we are talking particularly smallholder. And we want to make sure that we provide solutions for all categories. In the modern agriculture, of course, digital farming will play a very important role. We are moving much more towards this precision farming, where actually the customer-specific needs will be, let's say, very, very exactly matched and taken care of. And for that, of course, a closer collaboration with these farmers is absolutely essential. Smallholder requires much more attention, because here we have good soil in many developing countries, sub-Saharan Africa, for instance, but unfortunately agricultural practices are not up to the level for the farmer to actually gain enough income, not only to just feed his family, but making sure that the kids can go to school as well, and that he has also some money available for other investments.
And I heard also today some more about commitment to youth and agriculture. And beyond that, when you talk about somebody young, young companies with an incubator type project or initiative.
Of course, we do not believe that we know everything. And therefore, we are very, very interested in close collaborations. We would like to foster and also benefit from creativity and ideas from others. And these small startup companies sometimes have tremendously exciting ideas. Of course, we need to also be selective, so it has to fit also our portfolio, our strategy, and our vision. But with quite a number of collaborations now being set up also with startup companies, we feel a tremendous win-win situation for both sides.
I've been fascinated to see how companies like Bayer, for example, that's really not in the equipment business, but partnering with companies on technologies like your Easy Flow, I think it's called, or some drip irrigation with Netafim. How do you see those developing, and do you see continued opportunities partnering with other companies for those kinds of technologies?
Very good question. Absolutely essential for us. The drip irrigation is a very good example. Not only do we address a much more efficient and responsible usage of water, we know that agriculture requires a lot of water, but at the same time, you can actually use also this distribution system, drip irrigation, to apply your products and even fertilizers. So farmers don't have to go as much into the field anymore, and I think it is very logical where the benefits lie. The same also with machinery. Of course, spray applications need to become even more sophisticated when you talk about spot-on application in a field. So you leave some areas untreated because there's no need, there's no disease infestation, and only vulnerable areas at the moment come because of the data which you have accomplished, there you actually apply. And this requires a very close collaboration with machinery companies.
How about looking at this dialogue that we're having now? Where do you go from here when you come through an event like this? And what is the value you see for your company as well as your customers?
Charles, very, very important indeed. We definitely believe that we need to enter into as many opportunities as possible to exchange views, to move into a dialogue. And that is really with every kind of stakeholder. The customer, of course, we have been historically very closely attached to. But also we are talking about opinion leaders. We are talking about society as such. I mean, yesterday I opened the Bay Lab for primary school to address young children, to explain them about agriculture and what we are doing. It is ever so important. And therefore, we are also enabling our own organizations, we're talking about 20,000 people, to also be able to address our work, our contributions in a more convincing and simple way, so that they can talk to the neighbor, that they can also listen to concerns and address them. Ever so important. And we would like the farming community to join as kind of ambassadors. Agriculture has to become more transparent again. In the old days, in Germany or Europe, we used to have farm trails, so the public could actually enter the fields and go along. This is not as much visible anymore, and I think it needs to be reopened.
Before we close, anything else you'd like people to know about Bayer that we haven't touched on here that you think would be real noteworthy at this time?
I think the most important point for us now is to actually address the concerns which many people raise towards crop protection, for instance, or biotechnology, genetically modified organisms, which in Europe, as you know, are not tolerated and accepted. And this actually shows to us that more clarity, more transparency is ever so important, which is why we decided also to make, for instance, safety data available to whoever would like to actually have some insights. And this is something we will focus much more on in the future so that we can actually demonstrate our contributions and also make sure that give clear proof of the safety of our products and our solutions. Very important.
Yes, I heard that today. A website that's going to be devoted to showing safety data and information on the work that you do. Well, thank you very much for visiting with me here, and I really have enjoyed the opportunity to attend this year's Future Farming Dialogue. I'm Chuck Zimmerman reporting.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
Ahoy there!
Hi.
I see this be the spot for treasure.
Treasure?
Is that not a large X in your field?
Well, it is, but that's an alfalfa stand. And that X doesn't stand for the treasure you think. It stands for Harv Extra.
Harv, come again?
Harv Extra. It's the greatest innovation in alfalfa, giving me greater flexibility in my stand. It's technologically advanced to provide a wider cutting window, so now I can maintain a normal harvest schedule and achieve higher quality. Or I can delay harvest for up to 7 days for higher yield potential without sacrificing quality.
Aye, be that when compared to conventional alfalfa at the same stage of maturity?
You bet. And Harv Extra alfalfa comes stacked with Roundup Ready technology.
For unsurpassed weed control, I wager.
Sure is.
This has been great, matey. But can you point me to the nearest sea?
Oh, sure. Hang a right at the Taylor Farm and head west for 1,500 miles. Can't miss it.
We didn't invent alfalfa. We just reinvented it. See the difference of Harv Extra alfalfa at harvextra.com.
AgNet West Radio Network.
The House Budget Committee has voted 22-14 along party lines.
Your trusted agriculture news provider for the state of California. AgNet West's team of Sabrina Hill.
As crews continue to fight the Detweiler fire in Mariposa County.
Brian German.
Weedy rice has been a growing concern for California farmers.
And myself, Taylor Hillman. Join us every day to stay up to date with the latest agriculture news from AgNet West Radio Network and online at agnetwest.com.
And now another episode of One Soil to Live.
I just can't let you keep treating it like dirt, Claude.
Well, you know I don't mean to, Samantha. It's just I...
It's just what? You don't know it's alive?
Well, I...
Well, it is alive. And if you want to get the most out of it, you'll follow these four principles to keep it healthy and functioning.
All right, Samantha. I'm listening.
First, keep it covered. And keep living roots in it throughout the year with diverse plants and rotations. And finally, disturb it as little as possible.
And if I do as you say, Samantha?
If you do, Claude, I have a feeling it'll be the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
There's an amazing amount of life in healthy soil. More importantly, that life can help make our nation's farms more productive, profitable, and resilient. Contact your local USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service office today and learn more about the basics and benefits of soil health. This message brought to you by USDA and this radio station.
It's time to rethink what you know about clean American propane and what it can do for your operation. Want efficient, reliable power independent of the grid? Propane can do that. Power for EPA-compliant engines without all the extra fluids and filters? Propane can do that. Eliminate fuel theft. Lower hourly fuel costs. Reduce downtime. Propane can do all of that. Discover all the things propane can do on your farm at propanecandothat.com.
Welcome back to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. Wrapping up your Ag News today. Corn had a perfect week for maturing. Here's Stephanie Ho with more.
Well to the north and west of the hurricane's influence, it was what you might call a perfect week for corn and soybean maturation, particularly across the upper Midwest.
That was USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey.
Full maturity for corn, now 34%, and that's still substantially behind the five-year average of 40%. 57% and last year's 50%.
He says Colorado, Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and the Dakotas are reporting delayed corn maturity process.
Well, with the delayed maturity, obviously harvest is going to be delayed as well. We're at 7% nationally on September 17th for corn. Five-year average, 11%. Last year, 8%.
He says corn condition is pretty well locked in place at 61% good to excellent and 13% very poor to poor. No change from last week, but below last year's 74% good to excellent. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Already impacted by Irma 2 weeks ago, Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands face additional damages from a second hurricane this week, Rod Bain reports.
Another hurricane could deal a significant blow to the U.S. Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico starting on Tuesday evening.
And as the day progresses on Wednesday, we are likely to see a Category 3, 4, or possibly even Category 5 hurricane moving across or very close to Puerto Rico during the day.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says Hurricane Maria's path is slightly different than Irma, but could have similar effects. While St. Thomas and St. John were mostly impacted by Irma, this time Maria track could land a direct hit to the southernmost U.S. Virgin Island, St. Croix. And while the northeast section of Puerto Rico was hard hit by Irma, Rippey said it was a glancing blow compared to what may happen with Maria.
It's going to be really critical to watch the exact track of this system. Being a smaller storm than Irma, a direct hit would be much more devastating than a glancing blow.
He adds current projections show Maria most likely will recurve prior to approaching the U.S. East Coast. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
For more on any of the stories you've heard here this morning, visit our website at agnetwest.com. You can also find us on Twitter at agnetwest or myself at Sabrina W. Hill. This has been Farm City News Day by Agnet West, and I am your host, Sabrina Hill. Have a wonderful day.